said Omar Rav in the name of Rav. And again, since the last pasuk that we quoted as the proof was Gael to Bechal El Koyel, so we have in this case another drash given on the same verse. He says, Talmidei Chachomim, the disciples of the sages, in other words, those who study Torah, they do not have any rest either in this world or in the world to come. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, they go from strength to strength. They will appear before God in Zion. And the idea being, of course, that we should never be satisfied with where we are, but continue to progress ever and ever onward. And even in the Olam Haba, in the world to come, we will continue to go to greater heights over there. And finally, a very famous passage, because we say it in our Shabbos prayers, and this is the conclusion, not only in this Masechta, but several other Masechtas also quoted, but this is the original source. Omar Rabbi Elozar Avechaninor, Rabbi Elozar said in the name of Rabbi Chaninor, Talmidei Chachomim Marbim Sholom Ba'olam. So the disciples of the wise, the disciples of our sages, our Torah scholars, they increase peace in this world. Shenemar, even as the pasuk says, and now he brings several pasukim in order to show that the learning and the love of Torah will bring peace to the world. The first pasuk that he brings is Bechol Bonoyach Lemudei Hashem Rav Shlom Bonoyach. Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, all your children will be learned in God. In other words, they will know the teachings of God, Rav Shlom Bonoyach, and therefore great will be the peace of your children. And he suggests, Al Tikrei Bonoyach, don't read the last word as your children, Ela Bonoyach, but rather as your builders. The idea is not that we have to make an emendation in the verse, but what it means is that we can understand that our children are also the builders of our future. And those who study Torah will be the builders of our Jewish future. And then he concludes with other verses of peace. Shalom rov liyohavei so'asecho v'yein lomo mirshol. There is great peace for those who love thy Torah, and there will be no stumbling unto them. Yehi shalom b'chelech shalvim amnesoyach. May there be peace within your walls, may there be tranquility within your dwelling places. For the sake of my brethren and my friends, I speak peace concerning you. And for the sake of the house of the Lord our God, will I seek good for you. May God give strength unto his people. May God bless his people with peace. And now at this particular point, there is a series of little prayers that we recite at this point. And the first one is called Hadron. Hadron in Aramaic means, let us return. Hadron Aloch Maseches Brochos. May we return again unto you, Maseches Brochos, the Hadron Aloch. May we return unto you, the Hadroch Alon, and may you return unto us. In other words, we never want to stop learning. We always want to come to continue again and again to learn what we have so that we do not forget. Daton Aloch Maseches Brochos V'datoch Alon Lo'es Nashi Minoch Maseches Brochos V'Nashi Minon Lo'bom Hodeim V'Lo'bom Yosef. The last phrase tells us that we will not forget you, and you will not forget us either in this world or in the world to come. Yehi Ratzon M'Fanecho Adonai Eloheinu Rasenu She'eto Eschol V'Noseinu Bo'olam Hazeh. May it be thy will, O Lord our God, that your Torah will be what we will occupy ourselves in this world, and it will be with us in the world to come. Chanina bar Papa, Rami bar Papa, Nachum bar Papa, Achai bar Papa, Abba Mori bar Papa, Rafam bar Papa, Rochish bar Papa, Sucha bar Papa, Oda bar Papa, Dor bar Papa. We have all kinds of members with the Papa names. I guess they were Papa Chazirim or something like that. And okay. But I'm not going to say it three times because I know everybody is helping. Harev Noad Noel Hinus de Beso is called Bifino Fios Amcho Beis Israel. Make, O Lord our God, the words of thy Torah sweet in our own mouths and also in the mouths of thy people Israel.
And may we, all of us, together with our children, say, Tzei Amcha Beis Yisrael, and all the children of thy people, the house of Israel, Kulonu Yodei Shemech V'lam Beis HaRasecha. All of us, may we learn it in your name. In other words, may we know the meaning of what God is in our lives and learn thy Torah.
Him aminim yenon mekabim sachar. Onu rotsim vehem rotsim. Onu rotsim mechay olam abo vehem rotsim vehem shachas shenemal. Yator lihim tavidem vehem shachas. Anshei domim vimol o yechtu yimehem vani eftach bo. Yehi rotsal nefanecho adnoi lahai. Kishem shazartan nisayim masechet brachos. Ken tazrino hasfil masechtos. Vesforim achivim nisayimom vimol. Vilamei vishmur lasur kayim vishmur divay salam tzorsech liyahavo. וזכרו את כל התנועים והמורים וסומדי חלפונים יעמוד לי וזרי שלא ימוש חתרו מפי ופי זרי וזרע זרי עד אלום וסיס קיים בי בהסהלך וחותן כריסוך ושוח פחות ישמורך ואת קיצו שהסליחך כי בי יבו ימיך ויוסיפו לכל שלוש חגים אורך ימים בי בינו באושר רחובות בזמנו אדנו יוזר מויתנו נראה סבא ושלום. I will now recite a very special Kaddish which is based upon two things. First, the immortality and the prayer to God, not only to keep our souls always with Him and to revive the dead again, but also to rebuild the city of Yerushalayim and restore the Beis HaMikdash. This is the first thing. And then the theme continues later with our Yisrael Yalmanon, a prayer that for Israel, for our rabbis, for our sages, and for all those who study Torah, may they be blessed with Chayin Arichin, with a long life, with Zona Revichei, and also with great sustenance for Fulkana and God's salvation. And let us all say, Yizkada Oli Yizkada Shabbat Rabo Yomod Hu Achtid Elis Kadato Lachkayo Mesayo Lachkayo Lachkayo Bo Ula Mivne Kato Yishlein Shatel Hechavet Gabo Umea Kapu Kono Nikho Meyaro Ula Sol Pukono Nishmael Yatsrei Yom Nekutcha Berichu Vumalchus Yikorei Lachayi Chono Yomei Chono Lachayi Dechol Beis Yisrael והגולוב הזמן קריב ימרו אמי יהי שמי רב ומבורך ויורם ומבורך יזברך וישתבח ויזברך ויזחמם ויזבצי ויזהדר ויזלב ויזלב ושמי לקודשו וריחו ואילו ממקור בחוצה ושבעשו תויש בחוצה ונחמצו נאמירו מיומו וימרו אמי על ישראל ויעל רבנון ויעל תלמידי הון ויעל כל תלמידי תלמידי הון ויעל כל מן ויוסקים בורך יסוע דיבי אסחו דיין ודיבי כל עשר ועשר יהי להון ולכון שלמה רבו חינו וחיסנו ורחמין וחיינו הריחין וזו נעיר ויחי פוקנו מן קודם אברהוני ושמיו וירו וימרו אמן יהי שלמה רבו מן שמיו וחיים טובים עולינו ועל כל ישראל וימרו אמן עושה שלום ימרמו וברך עמוב יעשה שלום עולינו ועל כל ישראל ויאמרו אמן. תודה רבה. Before we start, I want to first of all express my thanks again to all of you for the beautiful card and gift which you gave me last week, and we really had a wonderful affair. I thought maybe we should take just a half moment to talk about the finances of it. We had 26 paid people over there. In other words, everybody paid, and the result was that, let's see, I wish I figured it out over here.
You got the bills? Did you get the bills?
Yeah, I got the bills today for me. So,
okay.
We did all right, thank God.
Can you make a living at this?
No. Okay, we collected $312, all told, okay?
Okay.
And the food cost us $168.88. Brian came to $100. So that would be $268.88. The woman who helped out was another $40.
So that already brings it to about $209. So, I mean $309. So the other $3, the shul gets it.
Donation.
Shul doesn't own it because they have to pay rate.
That's pretty close.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But we did well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was a very lovely affair.
It was.
And, so, Mir Hashem, I do want to say that because Tainus is only half the size of Brachas,
I think
we'll finish it either in 2 years or even less. Okay? Yeah. All right. So let us begin right now.
Now we're starting with
The very first
Perek,
right? Beginning, of course, it's always Daf Beis. All Gemaras start with Daf Beis, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. The Mishnah raises the following question. It says, "Be'emosai maskirin geburos kishamim." From when do we begin to mention the geburos kishamim? Now, needless to say, all these things require an explanation. Okay. In general, in order for us to understand the rest of this first Mishnah over here, we have to realize the fact that we actually incorporate two ideas for rain in the Shmoneh Esrei. Okay. First one is what we call Mashav HaRuach, or Morid HaGoshem, right? We pray that God should, not that God should, but rather we describe God's greatness. This is the difference, you see. We are describing God's greatness. And then remember, it begins with Ato Gibor Le'olam HaShem. You are mighty forever, O God, right? And then the next thing that's mentioned over there is Mechayim Meisan Ator, you know, that you revive the dead. Rav Loshir, and great is your ability, you know, to save us, okay? And at this particular point, then, at this time of the year, we add Mashav HaRuach, Morid HaGoshem, that God causes the wind to blow and the rain to fall, okay? And then we continue with Mechal Kel Chayim B'Chesed, that God gives parnasa, He gives sustenance to all living things, and his great loving kindness, and then the rest of it is again devoted to the basic idea of Sameh Dokum, Mordechai Chilam, Mater Asun, that God helps those who are about to fall, he heals the sick, and he frees those who are held captive, and then again, Mekayenim Menosu Lishenayofor, God will fulfill his faithfulness to all those who sleep in the dust, in other words, to the dead as well as to the living, okay? So that we're speaking then in the second paragraph of the Shmoneh Esrei. Good evening, Saul. Welcome. We're speaking in the second paragraph of the Shmoneh Esrei of God's gevuros, of God's might, his powers, okay? The great things that God is capable of doing for us and that he does for us. So, this is one phrase that has to deal with rain, as we know. Okay? The other phrase, of course, is what that we're familiar with, from which we began saying roughly on the 4th or the 5th of December. Namely, we say the same Kalamot of the Baruch Alpanei Hanoma. We pray that God should give, or grant, right, dew and rain on the face of the earth. This, of course, is added where? That in the what we call the Birkas Hashanim, the blessing in which we praise God, you know, for granting us Shanim Matoivos, right, good years, Baruch HaKadoshim and Baruch Hashanim. And this has to deal, of course, also with the basic concept of Parnasa. In other words, if the earth has enough rainfall, the earth will yield to us its produce, and we thank God for the produce which the earth brings forth for our benefit, okay? And naturally we thank God who is the source of all this. So these then are the two things that we're now going to be discussing at this particular point in the Gemara Titus. So that the first Mishnah starts by saying, when do we mention the Guros Yishamim? In other words, when do we mention the powers of rain, at what particular point? Of course, to a certain extent, you know, this is not the only chapter that begins with the word Me'emosai. Who remembers which other? Right, beginning of Brachos, if you remember. Is Me'emosai coming from
when you say the command?
From what time, right? And then, of course, the Mishnah after that
you know, and in the morning, you know, when and so on, right? You know, when you can recognize being Chavis Karsi, the two different colors, you know, that either blue or green or something like that, right? So, or according to another one, when you can recognize somebody at a distance, or if you can tell the difference between a dog and a wolf, you know, these were all different things. But anyway, Meir Mosai was the very beginning of Bracha, so again, we have a Meir Mosai over here. From what particular day, or from what particular point do we begin reciting this? Okay? So, there are two basic opinions mentioned over here. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Miyom Tov HaRishon Shalachah. Rabbi Eliezer says that we should begin reciting Masha V'Ruach the very first day of Yom Tov Sukkot. First day of Sukkot. Okay? Why? We'll see in the discussion. I mean, why he believes that we should begin reciting Masha V'Ruach. So, Rabbi Yehoshua Omer, Rabbi Yehoshua disagrees with Rabbi Eliezer. He says, "Biyantav Achlan Shalchad." We begin on the last day of Yontav. Now, naturally, when we say the last day of Yontav, you have to bear in mind that we're talking from the point of view of Eretz Yisrael. From the point of view of Eretz Yisrael, what is the last day of Yontav? Of course, the answer is Shmini Atzeres, and Shmini Atzeres itself stands sort of in a peculiar position, in that it's attached to Sukkot, to a certain extent it's part of Sukkot, and yet at the same time, as the Gemara says in Sukkot, you know, it's the regular day atzmo, it's a holiday all by itself, and to a certain extent it's really independent of Sukkot. That's the reason why we say, for example, Shecha Yonu on Shmini Atzeres. Of course, now that we have 2 days Yontav, then in that particular case, so you had 2 days of Shmini Atzeres, but what are you going to do with 2 days of Shmini Atzeres? So as a result, we divided the responsibility. Shmini Atzeres is Shmini Atzeres. And then the second day of Shmini Atzeres we call
Simchas
Torah, exactly. And they're developed in the course of the ages, you know, separate ceremonies and so on. But in Eretz Yisrael, where they celebrate 8 days of Sukkot, and that's it. I mean, you know, the 7 days of Yontif plus Shmini Atzeres. So what do they have to do on Shmini Atzeres over there? The answer is they do everything. They throw in Yisker, and of course the reading of the Torah then is not what we read on Shmini Atzeres, but instead they complete, you know, Mitzvos HaBracha. They complete the reading of the Torah for the year, so that it's celebrated both as Simchas Torah and Shmini Atzeres. It's both. And of course we know that in the Shmona Esrei, which we recite on Simchas Torah, the references are all, you know, Yom Shmini Chag Atzeres HaSeh. Alright, so according to Rabbi Yehoshua, then, when do you start in to recite Masha V'Ruach? The answer is on the 8th day of Yontav, meaning Shmini Atzeres. Alright. So far we see that the machlokes between them is that Rabbi Eliezer says that you should say Masha V'Ruach beginning on the first day of Sukkot, and Rabbi Yehoshua, on the other hand, says no, you begin on the 8th day of Yontav. So now the Mishnah continues with the discussion of this dispute between them. Omale Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua said to Rabbi Eliezer, he says, look, how will he not show me Melasim Klolam Bechad? Inasmuch as rain is considered nothing but a simon of cursing, that in other words, it's not a good sign, so to speak, on Yontif, Lamehu Maskin, then why should he mention it at that particular time? Okay, so this, of course, again requires further elucidation. Okay, there's a Mishnah, Gemara, and Sukkah, in which they speak about the fact, you know, that the first night of Sukkot, you are required, as we would say, midoraisa, by the law of the Torah, that you must eat in the Sukkah. Okay? The rest of it is considered optional, though, of course, since we observe 2 days of Yontif, so technically what applies to the first night would also apply to the second night as well. Okay? The other meals you should eat in the Sukkah, but you know, if let's say you're not feeling well or if it rains or something like that, okay, so you're not required. But rain at a time when we should be eating in the Sukkah is considered a nuisance, and of course the Gemara in the Sukkah there goes into greater detail as to how long are you required to stay in the Sukkah that first night in case it is raining,
And the answer is, until the time that the soup gets too full of water falling down from the roof, which...
They specify it,
right,
that?
Yeah, yeah. It comes and it spoils the taste of the soup, you know, that has been prepared, the mock bits, it says over there. And then that is, at that particular point, you can leave the sukkah. But otherwise, you expect it to stick it out and, you know, at least to eat, as we would say, a kezias, to make kiddush and eat a kezias in the sukkah. Okay? So, therefore, they say that rain in the sukkah is not a very good sign. Okay? Uh-huh. And the Gemara actually has another simile over there that they say. It's like the servant comes in to serve his master, and the master, in a fit of anger, spills the pitcher of water in the face of the servant. So we are the servants coming in order to appear before the Rebbeinu Shalalem in the sukkah, and if the Rebbeinu Shalalem, our master, is displeased with us, what does he do?
He
pours the water in our face. You see. So that, therefore, getting back to this argument, Rabbi Yeshua says to him, look, if it rains on sukkahs, it's not a good thing, so why do you want to begin saying Masha Baruch on the first day of sukkahs? You're inviting the Rebbeinu Shalalem to come and to pour rain on you.
Right. It's logical.
So now, of course, Rabbi Eliezer has to defend himself. All right? So, Amaloi Rabbi Eliezer. So Rabbi Eliezer answered him and he said, Afani lo yamati lishol, elo lahaskir. I said, I didn't mean that you begin praying for rain, although this is the way we pronounce it. I mean, like, if you say Geshen, and all the Siddurim, what are they going to say? Prayer for rain,
two.
Right? Prayer for rain.
Right, yeah.
Do is from the
that's right, yeah.
For
Pesach,
right. Right. So he said, but he says, I didn't say that you have to pray for rain. The shul means literally to ask for it, but here it means like to pray for it, right? But rather what I want to do is to mention the fact that rain is one of God's attributes. To recite what? Mashiv haruach, v'morid hageshem. In other words, God causes the wind to blow and he causes the rain to fall. And it's be'onot so. It should be said, says Rabbi Eliezer, at the right time. So, of course, the question is, why is Sukkot, if we go according to Rabbi Eliezer's opinion, why is Sukkot the right time in order to beg for rain, right? To ask for rain, to mention the fact that God gives rain when we don't want rain to fall? Even Rabbi Eliezer would be happy if the rain didn't come on Sukkot, right? So the answer is because we have other things associated with the festival of Sukkot, in which the basic theme is that we depend upon God for the rain to fall in order to enable us to have sustenance during the course of the year. So that this is the proper time in order to manifest our prayers in which we want to petition God, you know, that he should bless us with a fruitful year by giving us enough rain. Now, particularly, what are they referring to? Well, as we'll see, there are actually two different aspects. But we'll have, as we continue with the Gemara, we'll see that, you know, that they try to analyze this in greater depth. But I just want to mention them. One of them is what we call the four minim. What do we mean by the four minim? Of course, by that we mean the lulav, the esrog, right? The hadassim, the myrtles, and the arovas, the willows. All of them depend, of course, upon what?
Rain.
That rain, right? If there's rain, then they're going to grow, and so therefore, it's a sign of gratitude and prayer to God, you know, that we should be blessed with rain during the course of the year. That's one thing. The other thing is, as we'll see, there's another ceremony that was carried on in the Beis HaMikdash during the time of Sukkot. And there's a great big discussion in the Gemara, a beautiful description. This is a ceremony which is known as Simchas Beis HaShoeivos, which was one of the most joyous occasions during the course of the year when all Yerushalayim, the whole temple area was so lit up with tremendous illumination. Great big bowls of oil were burned, and you know, they set them up all over, and there were torches and everything else, so that the people in the house of Yerushalayim had enough light emanating from the temple that they were able to see light in their own homes and everything else. This is how it was. It was a very, very joyous ceremony. People would gather in the temple courtyards, and the great Chachamim would actually have all kinds of things, such as, for example, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if I remember correctly. He was an expert at throwing up torches in the air and catching them. He was able to juggle them. And there were other feats that they were able to accomplish. And, of course, they were singing, and the choir of the Levium, and with the Kahanim, and so on. You know, everybody was having a wonderful time over there. And it was one of the great occasions of the year. And what did it represent? It was the joy about the fact that they were able to pour a libation. The word for a libation is nisuch. They were able to pour a libation of water upon the altar again, so that, you know, it was a sign that we were grateful to God for the water that we have, and that we realized that it is impossible for the world to exist without water. So these are all connected with the idea of sukkahs. And of course, we'll also have reference to another Mishnah as we go on this page a little bit, and that is a Mishnah that we have in Rosh Hashanah. Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah starts in, if you remember, by saying, first of all, that there are four different Rosh Hashanahs. First of Tishrei, first of Nisan, right? According to Beis Shammai, that would be the first day of Shvat, but according to Beis Hillel, it's the 15th of Shvat. That's why we celebrate to this day, to the Shvat. And then the first of Elul, according to one opinion, that this was the time for the tithing of the new cattle. Okay, so at any rate, and then the very next Mishnah says that Yabor Prokim Oilam Nidon, says there are four times during the course of the year when judgment has passed upon the world, and it mentions them again, and one of them is, of course, Bachag Nidonim Alamayim, that on Sukkos then judgment has passed upon the world concerning how much water the world will be allotted. Of course, it means whether there'll be sufficient water or not, which areas will get water, which areas will not. In other words, the Ribbono Shel Olam at that time decides how the water is to be allotted, and he judges the world as to whether they deserve the water, you know, that he is granting to them. So, of course, on Rosh Hashanah, what are we judged for? That's the part of the Mishnah that I didn't mention right now, but that precedes it. Right? The while all have come into this world, stand before God, and they, you know, judgment is passed upon them. And of course, again, you know, the Gemara amplifies it. It's like everybody in the world passes before the Ribbono Shel Olam, kivnei moro. In other words, and there are different interpretations of what it means. Some say, like a flock of sheep passing by his shepherd one by one, and so you recognize the imagery that you have in the Sada Token. It comes from the Mishnah, you see. Yeah. That's the origin of it. So all these ideas are tied together. Alright, so we can see that Rabbi Eliezer has a point when he says that on Sukkos you should begin to say, because he says the festival of Sukkos is intimately bound up with the idea that God judges us for water on this day, and so therefore we mention the greatness of God in granting water and rain to the world. So, Omalei, Rabbi Yoshua says to Rabbi Eliezer, he says to him, in Cain, we yell him, hey, Maske. He says, if that's the case, what's to prevent you from all year round from reciting Mashiach Baruch? All that you're doing is just to mention that God is great. Then in that case, you can do it. But of course, one of the couple of words we had just before says very important, and that is be'enosa. It has to be at the right time. Right. You understand? Now that, of course, that is not being discussed over here, but it's obvious that does Rabbi Eliezer believe that there is a fixed time for reciting Mashiach Baruch Merla Goshem, or does he believe that it should talk and be said all year round? This is not answered at this particular point. But of course, we're going to see later on from our own personal experience, we know that there is a time when we begin and a time when we end. And now, this is what we're going to come to, okay. Now, in Shoal and Nisat Shonim, the next part of the Mishnah says that the prayer for rain, which we call Talamotar, this we ask for God, we do not begin saying it Ela Somach L'Shomim. We can only begin reciting this when it is near the time for the rainy seasons, for the rainy season in Eretz Yisrael to begin. Sure. Now, of course, we have to realize one thing, and that is that when we are praying, we're really praying from the point of view of Eretz Yisrael. We're not praying from the point of view of Bavel at this particular point, okay? Although we'll see that as a result, there is a difference in the starting date for Talamotar as compared to Eretz Yisrael and as compared to outside of Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, they began saying it on the seventh day of Cheshvan. And this is the law to this very day, that if you are in Eretz Yisrael, you begin saying Talamotar on the seventh day of Cheshvan, which is, of course, what? Approximately 2 weeks since... it's 2 weeks after Sukkot. Why? This we will learn. But not immediately we'll learn, right. But it's 2 weeks after Sukkot, okay? We'll learn the reason why when we come to it, okay? But in the Gola, outside of Eretz Yisrael, there we are guided by a different one. Now in Babylonia, they felt that you begin reciting it 60 days after the beginning of the Kufas Tishrei, 60 days after the fall season approximately begins. Now, of course, you have to remember that once upon a time, the calendar was based not upon what we use today, talking about the civil calendar, which is what we would call the Gregorian calendar, right? Mm-hmm. As compared to the calendar which was in vogue at the time of the Gemara, and which, as a matter of fact, the Greek Orthodox Church, you know, still retains for religious purposes to this very day. Namely, what they call the Julian calendar, because that's based upon a calendar that was put together under the sponsorship of Julius Caesar. That's why they call it the Julian calendar, okay? And you may remember that sometime in the 18th century, there was already something like an 11-12 day difference between the years as fixed on the Julian calendar as compared to the years in the Gregorian calendar, until finally they decided that the modern world should switch over to the Gregorian calendar, which was actually the calendar of the Catholic Church at that particular time. So therefore this 4th of the 4th of December business that we mentioned before, the beginning of Talamotar, it's not exactly 60 days since the start of fall, but it was 60 days back in the old days, you see. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, according to the older calendar, let's say the Julian calendar, then the 60th day at the beginning of the fall season would come out to about, you know, whatever date that was, but then it became changed to December 4th in the Gregorian calendar. Okay.
Didn't the Jews follow the Hebrew calendar?
Sure they did. But at the same time, they were also conscious of the fact that they were living in a world in which the other calendar was also observed.
We're familiar with the term solstice and equinox. You're talking about the beginning of the autumnal equinox as the beginning of fall. So you're talking September 21st.
Right.
So we're talking approximately 60 days after September 21st.
Should be, in other words, as I said, approximately it should have been December 21st. But
well,
since the time...
That would have been 90 days.
Huh?
That would have been 90 days or 3 months.
Yeah, that would have been 3 months.
December
October,
21st. December. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
All right. I'll accept that. But at any rate, I mean, this is the reason for. I mean, my mathematics may not be so high, but in general, I know the reason why, okay?
Question.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Actually, I have two questions. The phrase you used was about Tishrei. What was the phrase?
Tukufas Tishrei. Tukufa. No. You're thinking of Tafutsa. That's something else. Tukufa means literally the turning point. Okay, so in modern Hebrew, it's the word that we use for season. Season, epoch,
era. That's the meaning of the word tukufa. Okay.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But
right. But there are, you know.
Yeah,
okay.
Tukufa.
Right. Right. Right.
Second question.
Actually, the word itself occurs already in the Torah too. Chag haSukkos tukufas hashana. That the festival of the Sukkot is at the time when the year turns, literally. Okay. Yeah.
My second question is it the 2 weeks or the 60 days that correlates to the Jews that came for the Chagim and went back to Bethel?
Yeah, well, that's the basic reason why in Eretz Israel they begin on the 7th of Cheshvan. They figured it would take 2 weeks from the time that people left the Beis HaMikdash and got back to Babylonia. Not sure it will be the newest part of Babylonia, you know. So, in order to make sure that it wouldn't rain upon the pilgrims, that's why they didn't say Talamot until that point. But at that particular point, it's also about the time that the first rains occur in Eretz Israel. Of course, you can't always predict them, but experience shows that very often it's about the time that occurs. Yeah. Okay, getting back over here. All right. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, "So over lifnei ateva biyom tevo achron shel chag ho achron shel chag ho achron maskir ho rishon maskir." Okay. Now, as you know, on Yom Tov, how many Shmon Esmas do we have in the morning?
One.
No, we have two.
Oh, in the morning.
In the morning.
Oh,
right.
You mean the Musaf? So
we have right. We have the Shacharis one, and then we have the Musaf.
Well,
okay.
I would think of Musaf as the afternoon service.
No, at Yeshiva,
right?
At Yeshiva, it's the afternoon.
Yeah, you're right. So it was also customary in those days that instead of having, you know, a paid chazan, they had people who were qualified, they knew how to daven, and they were qualified, they were good to Yidden and so on. Very often our own illustrious Rabbonim would get, or the Talmidim, or whoever. So, it was customary then that someone would daven Shacharis, and another one would daven Musaf. Okay? So, what they're saying over here is, according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, that the person who was the chazan, who over lifnei ateva means, we saw that in brachas before too, that the person who stands before the ark in prayer, right? In other words, the chazan.
Right.
So, the one who was the chazan on the last day of Yom Tov, in other words, on Shmini Atzeret, so he says, Achron, the one who is last to lead, in other words, the Baal Musaf, sure. He is the one who is Matzkir. He is the one who mentions Mashiv Aruch Merit HaGoshim. Or Rishon, but the one who daven Shacharis, Eino Maske. He does not mention yet much Baruch Merit HaGoshim. He doesn't mention it. And of course, to this very day, this is our practice. That in Shacharis and Shmini Atzeres, we are still saying nothing. Of course, we daven Nusach Ashkenaz. If you daven Nusach Svard, or you were in Eretz Yisrael, you would say Borit HaTal.
Yeah.
Okay? And then
Borit HaTal.
Borit HaTal, right. And then afterwards, you say Mashiv Aruch when it comes time for Musaf. Okay? Now, the Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Pesach, on the first day of Pesach, it's just the opposite. HaRishon, in other words, the one who is davening Shacharis, he still says Maskir, he still says
Mashiv
Aruch Ben Lagosha. But HaAchron, the one who davens the Musaf, Eino Maskir. He does not mention anymore Mashiv Aruch Ben Lagosha. Okay? All right. All right. I think I'd like to take a look at some of the Tosfos and some of the Rashis and so on. Okay? Let's take a look at the first Tosfos on the top over there. Meir Mosad. See that? All right. So, Miyom Tov Achron Shel Chag. In other words, to begin reciting it, as Rabbi Yehoshua says, on the last day of Yom Tov. And of course, it's Shmini, in other words, the eighth day. Of course, why does Tosfos mention Shmini? Because in the time of Tosfos, they lived in France, obviously, they were also observing what? They're observing some Torah.
Oh.
They were
observing some
Torah,
right.
Yeah, it was the field day, right.
Yeah.
So they were observing already. So if you take literally the last day of Yom Tov, you know, in the Gola, any place, you know, outside of Eretz Israel, that would really be on Simchas Torah, which is the wrong time. So that's why Tosfos mentioned specifically that in Shmini it means Shmini Atzeres. Okay. And he says, the law Yeshvan B'Sukkah, because on Shmini Atzeres we do not sit in the
Sukkah.
Ba'afilu ha'idna. And even now he says, Eino elo midarabona, Mishum Sveikah. The only reason why people eat in the Sukkah on Shmini Atzeres is because, first of all, it's like a rabbinic decree, right? This is something which is instituted by the rabbis, but it's not midoraisa, it's not from the Torah. And also, he says, because we have another reason, and that is what we call the Sveikah D'Yoma. In other words, why do we make 2 days Yom Tevim? Because we are in doubt as to whether the first day or the second day
it's
is the,
right the day.
Real day, the right day. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, there's no problem.
Sveikah D'Omer?
Sveikah D'Yoma. Sofek means doubt.
Yeah.
Sveikah D'Yoma, doubt as to which is the genuine day of Yom. Because the Gemara already in Beitzah, which many of our editions over here precedes it, they already asked the question, I mean, why, you know, in days when they had to calculate, you know, when is Rosh Chodesh, on the basis of observation, and that could only be done, as we saw in Eretz Yisrael. Remember, we had the last week over there, the business about this Rabbi Elazar, who went to Babylonia, and he wanted to be Ma'abir Shonim over there, and they told him, stop. We read that whole incident over there. So, at any rate, from Eretz Yisrael, in order to send the news to Babylonia, they used to have signals, so that the light bonfires and things like that. And then along came the Minim, in other words, probably the Christians, and they wanted to make service for the Jews, so they would light false bonfires. As a result, the only way that they could find out, they decided to abolish this idea. So instead, they would send messengers to go out and to tell the people in the Gola, Bavel specifically, you know, when it was. Maybe they also sent them to Syria and to other places too, you know. So at any rate, the custom therefore arose, you know, that out of doubt, we have Sveikah D'Yoma. All right. Then several centuries passed by, and Eretz Yisrael was threatened, because the Jewry of Eretz Yisrael was threatened by the Christian rulers already of Rome, the Byzantine rulers who were in charge, with persecution and everything else, so that it became almost an impossibility to get a Sanhedrin together in order to do it. So Hillel the Second, who was, you know, a great 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 grandson, you know, of the original Hillel Hazokin, as we refer to him, so he made a calendar. So the Gemara wants to know why, now that we know exactly when is Rosh Chodesh, because the calendar tells us when it is, so why observe 2 days? But the answer that they said is Minhag HaMisei Miyadeyem. It had become a holy minhag to observe 2 days Yom Tov, and therefore we did not abolish this. We have to have respect for the things which our ancestors did and observe them to this day. So that is the reason why today we still have 2 days Yom Tov. All right. So that
you
being
say we have no Sveikah.
Huh?
We have no Sveikah.
We know when it is, but we still refer to it as Sveikah the Yom. Okay. And this is what he says, the Afa God, even though the Bekian Dik Via the Arfa, even though we are all expert today in, you know, determining when is Rosh Chodesh, Gezeira. This is a decree that we observe, namely 2 days Yom Tov, Shemo Yaksa Hadon Kukulo, because maybe the time would come when again the authorities, let's say, who determined the when was Rosh Chodesh, maybe, let's say, these authorities would be killed off by persecution, and people would not have the calendar, the means of knowing when it is. So it's possible that things might turn bad again. Or, as this is the one that I quoted, the official one, namely, that we have the minhag of our ancestors that we observe, kiddies of a parakama de beitza, even as we find it in the first chapter of beitza, the lochein, and therefore, matcharinon, this is the reason why we mention the, you know, mashavarua, when? On Shmini Atzeres, this is when we begin saying it. Avol called Shiva, lo. But all 7 days of Sukkot, no, we don't mention it. Because rain, and during the days of Sukkot, this is a sign of displeasure on the part of the Rebbeinu Shemelim. We learned the second parak of the Sukkot. In other words, the parable of the slave. I told you what it was. Okay. All right. Then the next one too. Imkay. So remember, what did Rabbi Yeshua say to Rabbi Eliezer? Not only that they disagreed with him, but he says, if you say all that you want to do is just to mention God's greatness by saying Masha Varuah,
you
can say it all year round, right? So this is what they say, Im Kain. So if that's the case, if you say Maskirin, right? In other words, you'll only make mention of a... Inasmuch as the idea of rain in its proper time, up the kites ask you, should you mention it also in the summertime? So tell me, Rabbi Eliezer, why then do you give us a simon that when do we begin saying it? On the first day of Sukkot. If you say that you can say it all summer long, then why do you come at the beginning of this mishnah and tell us that you begin saying it on the first day of Sukkot?
Turns it around on you.
Right. Rabbi Eliezer, and then Varayas of the Gemara, and then Rabbi Eliezer says, with Varayas of the Gemara, that call a kayat all summer long in Bola Haskia Basket. He says, if you want to mention it, you can mention it. Because it's always proper for rain to come. But Mihu, nevertheless, Ad Hashtor, until this day, in other words, until the first day of Sukkot, Lo Rami Aleichova, there is no obligation to say it. It's only, you know, voluntary if you want to do it. But the obligation to say it, right, about the Yontav Rishon, on the first day of Yontav, Choma, it is now an obligation, the Ratzos, that is to pray unto God, right? Lepnei She'elo, She'kol Abola Vaka, okay, let me explain now what Tosfos is saying over here. This Leratzos means that first you have to sort of set the ground for the petition. In other words, like you approach the Rebbeinu Shalalem, right? The first thing that you do, you don't immediately come and say, Rebbeinu Shalalem, give me this, Rebbeinu Shalalem, give me that. First, you have to lay the groundwork. So that's the Ratzos. So in other words, Rabbi Eliezer is saying, on the first day of Sukkot, we begin by laying the groundwork, by saying, God, you are great, you cause the rain to fall, and so on and so forth. And then, when the proper time comes, right? With Nesha Elon, and that's before you actually make the request. Shekol Habola Vakesh, because whoever comes in order to ask his petition, Maktim Amaratse. The first thing that he does is to try to, you know, appease, literally. In other words, you try to put the person for whom you're asking a favor, put him in a good mood, you know. Okay? Vasimim Klola Loi Kaptinon. And according to then Rabbi Eliezer, he was not worried particularly about the fact that rain on Yontif is a simon klola. But Rabbi Yehoshua, Rabbi Yehoshua is concerned about that, and this is the reason why, you know, he says, hold off, you wait until Shmini Atzeres. Okay.
Yes.
Well, you take it whichever way it means to the... you have to, in other words, understand the words in their own context. Always. Okay? Lahakim over here means you know, like, first you preceded with this and this, after that you do the next. That's how it has to be understood. Yeah. You're welcome. You know, there isn't just one meaning to many words. The word is susceptible to different meanings, but you always have to see what is the meaning of the word in its context. Exactly.
The coloration.
Yeah, right. Okay, Gemara.
Back to the Gemara.
Right. Tana hechakai, the katani me'emosai. This reminds us again of a similar thing in Brachos, where there he wanted to know, you know, where does the Tana, in other words, the teacher of the Mishnah, base it upon? Does he have something, you know, to as a precedent someplace else? Okay?
Does he have a proof?
In Brachos, right, we said, you know, Tana hechakai. So the answer is, you know, that we went back even to what? To Bishach Lachov Kamecho, if you remember, okay? That the idea that you have to say first in the evening and then in the morning. In other words, why did the Mishnah over there deal with first, you know, Krishna in the evening and then Krishna in the morning? It was because in the Torah too, the Maaseh Bereishis, so to speak, first you have Vayehi Erev, then you have Vayehi Boker, you see. So that this is the order in which our days go, and this is the way. Here, they want to know again, where does he base the fact, you know, that he asked this question, from when do we begin? He has to have a basis for it. So they say, yeah, there is a basis. First of all, we learned something in Brachos, the Katone, and this we learned, of course, in the Gemara, Matzkirin Gevuros Keshomim B'Tchiyas HaMesim. That says specifically that we have to mention the praise of God in bringing rain in the bracha of Tchiyas HaMesim, you know, the second Nata Gibor, literally the blessing in which we praise God for the revival of the dead, the Shoalin, and then we ask for rain, we petition for rain where? The Birkas HaShonim, in the bracha of, you know, Boruch Aleinu, which concludes Boruch HaShem, the Boruch HaShonim, right? The Havdolah, and the Havdolah, when do we recite? We recite that, the Chenin HaDoas, in other words, the first of the intermediate brachas of the Shmona Esrei. And there, if you remember, we learned why. Why did we do it over there in Atochenein? Because there's a famous Gemara that they quote from Yerushalmi, particularly, which says, Imein das havdolah minayin, that if you don't have knowledge, how would you know how to make a distinction, whether it's a distinction between day and night, between Shabbos and the Vav, and so on, right, between Chodesh Luchol. So that's the reason why we say it over there, although you may remember that Rabbi Akiva, for example, said it should be said in Modem Anachtem. But nobody agreed with Rabbi Akiva in that case. So, all right. So there, specifically, it says what? Matzkirin Gevurah Keshomim B'Tchiyas HaMesim. And Shoalin B'Birkas HaShonim. So, okay. And then it says the Katoni, and then, so we learned by Mosai Matzkirin Gevurah Keshomim, right? Then we learn, and when do we begin to mention then this Gevurah HaShomim? So he says, well, this day Hosa. So now, the Gemara asks the following question. Brachos is where? Beginning of the Masechta, right. But remember, the way Brachos is arranged within the Shisha Sidre Mishnahs, we would say, in the six orders of the Mishnah, Brachos is the first of what Seder? The answer is Zeroyim. Seeds. Right. And then after that you have, you know, Peor, Demai, Maaseh Sheni, Maaseh Rishon, etc., etc., Trumos, and so, you know. You have a whole group of various Maasechtos, Shviyos. Okay? So, you have a whole group of them, and now it says, V'lisnei Hosam. So, why didn't we learn all this business over here about, you know, when to begin saying it? See, there in Brachos, it's what? It's only mentioned that this is when you begin saying it in Fatih. Is there a discussion about it over there? No, there's no discussion. So he says right now, V'lisnei Hosam. So why couldn't we learn this whole discussion that we had over here, the difference between Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Eliezer? Yes, why didn't we learn it over there in Brachas? Maishno de Shavke Ad Hocha. Why is it that you put it off until you finally get over here? And what is over here? Over here is Maseches Tainus. And where is Maseches Tainus found? The answer is it's in Seder Moed, which is a different Seder altogether. Why did it wait so long, you know, for us to have a discussion? Wouldn't it have been more appropriate to have it over there? So he says, Elo, but rather he says, Tadam Rosh Hashanah Salat. He says, in truth, the reason why it's put in over here as part of Seder Moed is not because it was already mentioned in Brachos, because that was way back. Rather, it's based upon the fact that we have in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah also a reference to this. The Tanan, as the Mishnah tells us over there, Rosh Hashanah, Uvachag, and on Sukkos, Nidonin Alabayim, judgment is passed, you know, for
what water will
be granted for the world. Okay? Now, the Aide de Tana, Uvachag, Nidonin Alabayim, and inasmuch as we have learned over there that on Sukkos, judgment is passed for water, so Tana, that's the reason why now, which follows upon Rosh Hashanah, I mean, Rosh Hashanah is not far away from here. In other words, it's part of the natural continuation of the discussion of Seder Moed. So therefore, now the Tana comes and he teaches us, so he wants us to learn, Mei Mosei Maskin Gevuos Keshamin. All right. So far, so good. Now they ask another question. He says, V'lifnei, why doesn't the wording read as follows? From when do they begin to make mention concerning rain? In other words, what word is not over here? What did the Mishnah begin with?
What's the right time?
Yeah, it's not just the right time, but the point is, why couldn't they simply say, you know, when do we simply begin mentioning about rain? Why did we have to say the word Gevuros Geshamim? In other words, the powers of God as displayed in rain. Would it be necessary? Would it be okay if we simply had left out the word Gevuros? You understand? Whereas the Mishnah here says specifically Gevuros Geshamim. So, my Gevuros Geshamim. What do we mean then by Gevuros Geshamim? Why is it called that? So Omer Rabbi Yochanan says the reason why it's called Gevuros Geshamim is Mipnei Sheyodim Nigvur. The reason is because rain falls literally through the power
of God.
Exactly, that's it. Shenemar, and now he brings some psukim from the book of Job and other places in order to show that it's a sign of God's power in nature. Osei Gedolos Hadin Heker, Pasuk in Job says over there that God performs gedolos, all kinds of great things, ad ein cheker, so great that you cannot even begin, literally, to search them out. It's unsearchable. In other words, you can't even begin to understand the greatness of it. Benifloys, and wonders, ad ein espor, without number, right? Incidentally, where do we quote, hoise gedolos, ad ein cheker, benifloys, ad ein espor? We say the Marav every night.
Right.
Yeah. But the source is where it comes from. Okay. Uchsiv, and another pasuk says over there, Hanosei Motar Al Pnei Eretz, that God gives rain upon the face of the earth, the Shaleach Mayim Al Pnei Chutzos, and he causes water to go forth upon the surface of the wide open spaces. So, my mashma. So, in other words, what then is the meaning behind this word Gevuros, Gevuros Geshamim. So I'm a Rabbi Bar Shila, Atzio, he says, we derive it through Cheker Cheker, Nivriyoso Shalelo. In other words, we have what we call a Gezerah Shava. What is a Gezerah Shava? It means that when you have two words that are similar, so if the word is associated with A and the same word is associated with B, then we say that there is a connection between A and B. Alright? So, where do we have the word cheker in connection with the creation of the world? And where do we have it in connection with rain? Well, in connection with rain, we've seen it's already said over here, right? That Eise Gedolos had a cheker to place something in a spore. And what are the Gedolos at the Nifloys, the answer is they say Motop de Oretz, right? So from the book of Job we see that this is part of God's Gevuros. Good. And that's Gedolos in Cheker, right? Then Nibriyosu Shalom, in connection with the creation of the world, Ksiv Hocho, here we say Oskidos and Ifeka, right, Ksiv Hosom, and there, in connection with the creation of the world, we have a pasuk in the book of Yeshayahu. Prophet Isaiah says, Halo Yodato and Lo Shamato, do you not know? Haven't you heard? Elohei Olam Hashem Barei Ketzos Haoretz, God is the creator of the very ends of the earth. Lo Yiyach, but Lo Yigah, he will never be tired, he will never be, he does not have to toil. Ein Cheker L'Svudoso, there is no searching, in other words, there is no human understanding of God's great wisdom. So, and then another pasuk. Ksiv, it's written in Tehillim, Meichin Horim Bechol Chol Nezer Begvura. God literally prepares the mountains, in other words, he makes the foundation of the mountains in his might, and he is girded in Gevura. So from this we can see that Gevura is also associated with what? With the creation of the world, right? Umenalon de Tefillah, and how do we know that it should be in Tefillah, in prayer? The Tanya. As we learned, and this again, we had the Gemara in Brachos. In the Shema Yisrael, we say in the second paragraph, Liyahavu es Hashem elokeichem, ulavdo bechol avadechem, right? In other words, God tells us to love the Lord, your God, and to serve Him with all your heart. So, Eizu hi avoda shehi balei, what is the service of God which is in our hearts? And a yomer, you have to say, zut filon. This is prayer. Prayer is the service of our hearts. Luchsiv basrei, and what do we say immediately afterwards in the Shema Yisrael? V'nosati mitar arzachem b'yito yorel malkosh. I will give the rain of your land in its proper season, the first rain and the later rain. So that we see then that all this is associated with the idea of God being gibor, right, that these are part of his gevuros, right? And therefore this is why this prayer is referred to not simply the prayer for rain, but rather the prayer in which we mention the gevura of God in granting us rain. So now the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan said, there were three keys, he says, in God's hand, which were never given over to a shaliach, in other words, to an angel. God himself is responsible to hold these three keys. And what are these three keys? The Elohim, they are Mateach Shel Geshomim, the key which unlocks the rain, the Mateach Shel Chaya, and the key which unlocks the time when a woman, a kimpatoran, has to give birth. Chai over here has nothing to do with animals. No. It has to do with the fact it's a woman who is not just pregnant, but she is giving birth, right? The due to give birth. Umateach, and the key shall tchias hamesin. God himself possesses the key for that. When the time will come, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam will do his job, right? Mateach shel Geshomim. How do we know that God possesses the key for rain? Dichsiv. Pasuk says in Sefer Devarim, it says, Yiftach ad Hashem lecho esetzarei hatovus hashamayim. God will open for you his treasure house, his good treasure house, literally, the heaven itself, in order to give you mitar artzecho b'yito, to give you the rain on your land in its proper time. So, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam doesn't give this over to an angel. He is the one who will take personal charge of that. Nafteach Shel Chayot. How do we know that the Rabbeinu Shel Olam also has the key for women who are about to give birth? Dixiv. Pasuk says, Vayizkar lehim es Rachel, Vayishma eleho Elohim, Vayiftach es Rachel. Right, because that God remembered Rachel, in other words, remembered her. Remember, Rachel was childless all these years, right? She was unable to conceive, and of course, it galled her. This is why she was so jealous of her sister Leah, right. Because even though Rachel was the favorite wife, so to speak, of Yaakov, and Leah was not as beloved as Rachel, but nevertheless, Leah was blessed with how many children? Altogether, of course, she had six sons and one daughter. Okay. At the point when this is, it actually should already had four, if you remember.
Right,
the first four. And then, you know, Rachel was extremely jealous, and she begged Leah, you know, she came to Yaakov Avinu, and she said to him, you know, why don't you give me a child? Why are you giving children to Leah and you're not giving me a child, right? And he answered her, Hasachas l'kim on okay. He says, am I in the place of God? Hashem monam enechu privotin. It was God who prevented you from having it. I didn't prevent you from having a child. So eventually, of course, she prayed, right? And then God remembered Rachel, and he hearkened unto her. God hearkened unto her by Yiftachas Rachmo, and he opened her womb. So that is also the Mafteach, okay? Yes. Yeah, Mu'uberes. Mu'uberes. But Chaya is also used in the sense of a pregnant woman. A barren woman. Akora. Right.
Akora.
Ayin kuf reshe. Torah says to us that one of God's blessings will be that that there will be among you no man or no woman who will be barren. Yeah. Well, of course, Akeret Habayis, you know, what the pasuk really meant up there when it says, Moshivi Akeret Habayis means that God takes the woman who has been barren at home and make her into a joyful woman, joyful mother of children. Okay? So that being the case, you know, this is what the original meaning of the pasuk in Tehillim is. But today in Israel, Akeret Habayit means, you know, the housewife. She's busy all the time taking care of her household and so on. So now they use it in that sense today in Israel. Yeah, yeah.
The word kibbutzim, what is that?
That's Yiddish.
Yeah, I understand. I hear you using it in this context.
Yeah.
I
remember Kimpatorn is a woman who was giving birth. Trail. Right. Yeah.
But
right.
That's a little, the time of actual delivery.
Yeah, actually, right. You know, when she starts at the field of pangs, go to the hospital, she's a Kimpatorn. Okay. And shortly after giving birth, she's still a Kimpatorn.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. See, Lichten Kimpat. Negating him.
I always thought it was a Yiddish word.
That's a Yiddish word, right?
Kimpetor.
Right.
Kimpetor.
Okay.
I didn't think it was.
Yeah. All right. Now the third key, remember, is Mafter Shel Tchiyat HaMeisim, right? The key for the revival of the dead. Minayin. How do we know that God is the one who possesses it? Dichsiv, as the pasuk says, and this is of course the famous 37th chapter in the book of Ezekiel, where, if you remember, he prays in the valley of the dry bones, and God causes a miracle to take place, and what happens? The dry bones take on life, and they come back to life again. And there we find the pasuk that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, you know, first the Rebbeinu Shel Olam shows him this valley of dry bones. He asks him, do you think these ever can live? And, you know, Yechezkel answers, he said, only you, God alone, know whether these things can happen. So he says, V'yadatem ki ani ad Hashem, and you will know that I am the Lord, v'fischi es kivoseichem, when I will open up your kivorim, in other words, I will open up your graves and bring you back to life again. So this is the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Now, the Ma'arovo, in the West, meaning, of course, in Eretz Yisrael, Amre, so the sages there say, Af Mater Shel Panosa. God also holds the key to Panosa. Ditziv, as the Pasuk says, Hoseach Es Yodecho. Right? You open your hand, etc. Matzvielachol Chavetzon. You satisfy all living things with your favor. So, Rabbi Yochanan, my Tamalo Kachoshim Lahor. So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan mention this fourth one also? So Omalachor, his explanation is, Yeshomim, I knew Panosa. If God brings rain, then you know that there's going to be Panosa. So it wasn't necessary to mention. Okay, I think we shall... call it an evening at this particular point. So on Yitzhak Hashem, next week we shall continue at this point. But as I say, I think that we'll be able to proceed a little bit more quickly, maybe. We certainly won't have to wait 4 more years. Well, I go by Sam's record. I lost track. Very good.
No. I think he started June of 89. I know I joined in August of 89.
Oh, we had already studied Rosh Hashanah before that, right?
No, Kedushin.
Approximately June of
89
to December of
93.
Yeah.
Okay, so with God's help, we'll be able to make a single year.
Translation.
Do you
want to
turn this up?
Yes.
We are now on It's Daf Beis, Amud Beis.
Amud Beis?
Yes.
Daf Beis, Amud Beis.
Right. Amud Beis. Wait a minute, let's find the right place for you, Mickey. You're in the wrong sefer. We're in Daf Beis, Amud Beis.
It's now December 29th, 1993. Right.
And we are now on the sixth line.
Sixth line.
Sixth line, right.
Now, what page, what would that be, number four in English?
That's right.
And on the sixth line.
Okay. Right. Okay. Now, we get back again, of course, to the difference of opinion, you know, mentioned as to when do we start into say Masha Baruch Mirat HaGoshem. In other words, what is the proper time for it? And as we saw in the Mishnah, they mentioned different authorities. Okay, as we just turn back again for a moment, we'll see. The first authorities that were mentioned were Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Hoshua, right? Mm-hmm. And we saw that the difference between them is that Rabbi Eliezer says that you begin saying Masha Baruch on the first day of Sukkot, and Rabbi Yehoshua says that you begin saying it on the last day of the Yontif, meaning of course on Shmini Atzeres. Okay. Now of course at this point the Gemara now wants to elucidate further, you know, what is the point of difference first of all between these two, and also to bring in other opinions that they look favorably upon other days of the holiday of Sukkot and why they do. So that this is what the next Indian is going to be. All right. So, they quote, of course, the Mishnah of the Ezor, Me'ab Yom Tov, Rishon, Shalchag, right? That he says that you begin saying Masha Ruach on the first day of Yom Tov Sukkot. So, the question is, Iboilabur, that means the question was asked. Okay? Rabbi Eliezer, Me'echo Gamilo, says, where did Rabbi Eliezer get this teaching that you begin saying it on the first day? So they ask the following question. They say, "Milulav gomalo, or minisachamayim gomalo?" Did he derive it from the fact that it's similar to the practice of, you know, benching lulav and esrog, or is it because of the ceremony of the nisachamayim where they would pour a libation of water on Sukkot? Okay. We'll find out, you know, the difference between these two points of view in just a second, okay? So they say, the lulav gomalo. They say that he gets it from the fact of the lulav. Ma lulav bayom, af haskora bayom. Right? In other words, if you say that he derived it from the fact that it's similar, it's analogous, you know, to the mitzvah of the lulav. So, when do we begin benching the lulav in the esrog?
The first day of
Sukkot. Right. Okay. So therefore he says, Afaskora Bayon. Then, that being the case, he should start in also to mention on the very first day of Sukkot, Masha Baruch Merit HaGoshen. Oh, Dilma, or maybe it wasn't, his reasoning was not based upon the analogy, let's say, to the Lulav, but rather to the Nisachamayim. Or Dilma, he says, Min Nisachamayim Gomala. Maybe he learned it from the ceremony of libation of water. Mam Nisach HaMayim Be'urta, just as the Nisach HaMayim, that is the water libation, you know, where they would pour water on the altar, this was Be'urta, this was in the evening. The Omar Mar, as one of the authorities said, Amin Chosam Niskehem, this is a teaching, it's an anonymous one, but it says Omar Mar, you know, so it means an authority stated this.
What is that
okay?
Small olive there? When you
the small aleph, I'll tell you what that is in 1 second.
Okay.
Uminchasom niskehem. He says that the you know, their meal offering, the mincha, the niskehem, and also the libations, afilu balayla, this could also be done in the evening. So av haskora miurta. So likewise, mentioning of the Moshe Rabbeinu could also be done from the evening. Now, okay. With the Nisach HaMayim business, I mean, if this is what he based it on, there are two problems, okay? Problem number one is the implication now, therefore, that as soon as the evening of Sukkot occurs, do you begin reciting Moshe Baruch? In other words, starting to say it with the very first Marav? The very first Marav, right? Is that what he means? Or, as some of the other commentators suggest, that Meurta means the following evening. Now, if it's the following evening, that particular case, it doesn't make very much sense. But it'll only make sense if we follow this opinion, which says that a minchasam and iskehem means that it can be done at night. In other words, not that it must be done at night, but that it can be done at night. So in that case, if the mincha, the meal offering for the sacrifice, and the wine offering, you're right, could also be done in the evening if they didn't have a chance to do it, let's say, during the day or something like that. So in that case, the implication would be then, okay, since it is possible to do it during the day, and of course, obviously, every day of Sukkot has its meal offerings and its wine offerings. In fact, that was every single day of the year, because when you have the tumid, in other words, the sacrifice, the daily sacrifice that was brought every morning and every afternoon, they were always followed by a minchasam niskehem. They always had it. But of course, the chiddush with Sukkot is the fact that in addition to the nisuch hayayim, in other words, the libation of water, then they also had an additional wine. Nisuch hayayim is, you know, the libation of wine that they poured on the altar. They also had a libation of water that they poured on. Obviously, that's connected with the idea of rain, you see. So it's connected with the idea of rain, so therefore, you know, this is the justification why Rabbi Eliezer feels that the first day of Sukkot is the proper time to begin saying it. Whether he means to start to say it from Arab, or whether he means to start to say it during the day, let's say Shacharis or Musaf, this is not made clear, to be exact. Okay? Mm-hmm. But the Urta, which means normally in the evening, so this would seem to be the ordinary way. We could take a look at how Tosfos takes a look at this, okay? Very first Tosfos on the page. Iboilu, you see it over there?
Yeah.
All right. Rabbi Eliezer Mehecha Gomila, right? So, says. The explanation of that is that if you say Svanulov, then Svanulov have a Ritsui Domi. Ritsui Domayim, excuse me. That's a bad one. Which means the lulav is there in order really to represent the fact that we're entreating God for water. As I explained last week, I mean, the lulav, the hadassim, the esrig, the arabis, you know, they grow with water, and therefore when we wave them before the Levena Shalem, in part that is in order to propitiate him, to pray unto him that he should bless us with a good year, that the following year should be blessed with sufficient water.
Rain. Yeah.
Right, rain, water. Okay? So perish, but lulav have ritzu damim, right? The god ritzu damayim, the god el alamayim. After all, because it grows with water. Oh, dilmo, or maybe minusuf gamalo, perish. The explanation meaning the nafka mino, and the difference would be imelulav gamalo, avol nisuch hamayim svirlei de labiyam ushenhu. Are we to assume the following? That he learns it from the lulav, then in that case it means the first day. But if he learns it instead from nisuch hamayim, then in that case he's of the opinion maybe that on the first day it doesn't happen. Oh, minusuch hamayim kogom alo, or in other words, then you should begin saying it on the second day maybe. This is what he means. But obviously it's a contradiction to what he has said. You see, so as we can see, Tosfos was trying to analyze what exactly does it mean. Okay? Oh, maybe. Minusach HaMayim Kogamala, maybe learn from Nusach HaMayim, the Sfira Lay, because he may be of the opinion that the Nusach HaMayim Beyom Rishon Hu, that there is water already, a libation of water on the very first day, not, you know, the second night, but on the first day. So Inami, maybe also, the Ima Lulav Gomar, maybe if we go back again to the supposition that he learns it from the Lulav, so Dapke Bayom, then it would mean that Dapke, you have to begin saying it during the day. Maybe that's the reason why he says the Lulav, right? Because what did we learn about the Lulav? It's written over there, Ulakachtem Lochem Bayom. You shall take the Lulav, you know, Bayom Barishon on the first day. But the word here, you know, the operative word is the word Bayom. In other words, Lulav, you don't make a bracha over at night, but you make a bracha only during the daytime. Right. Avol, Imenusach. But if, you know, he learns it from Nusach HaMayim, then that would be possible even in the evening. Well, Inyan Zeh, Ahane, the Omar Mar, so for this, this next statement that they quote, you know, this anonymous statement where it says, Min Chosam Nishem Balaila, so Af, in other words, the perish, the Af Al Gav, even though the Nusach Korbanos, that the libation for the various sacrifices, Lo Have Adli Acha HaKoros Korbanoseham, it could not be poured until the sacrifice themselves had been, you know, burnt on the altar. Okay? The imkain, and if that's the case, hech karevei nesochim balayla. So how could we say that the nesochim should be offered at night? If it follows immediately after the animal sacrifice has been slaughtered and, you know, the blood sprinkled on the altar and so on and so forth, right? Then in that particular case, how can you say that it happens at night? Rotsa Lomar, so therefore, one opinion is that Balayla Shniya, that he means you start with the second night. The Hanisuch HaChag, and the libation that was connected with the holiday festival, is the Hevi Mimayim, which was of water, so Motsi Meheve Balayla Rishayna. That could be, he says, on the first night. The Apogad Amin Masechas Yumo of the Perik Rishayna. That Omar Ravi, Tim Rabbi Yochanan, Imanaschim, Mayim, Bachag, Ela, Betomit, Shel Shachar. There's an opinion in the Gemara Yuma which says that the water was poured only with the morning sacrifice. For Yimkei, Lo Heaven, Balayla, Rishonah. In that case, you don't say it the first night. The Ho Eino, Ela, Bayom. Right? So therefore, Yesh Lomar, we have to say the Eino, Chayla, Naseich, Ela, Betomit, Shel Shachar. That the chiyuv, in other words, the obligation to pour the water, would only be after the tomet shel shachar, after the morning sacrifice. So they call malkim iboy ovid lebalayla. But if he wants, he can do it at night. So getting back, as I say, you can see, you know, that they're not altogether clear as to what exactly his opinion would be. Would he say that you begin saying it in the morning, or would you say that you begin saying it at maariv time? So it might be one, it might be the other. Obviously, if lulav is the determining factor, then in that particular case would have to be in the morning. Exactly.
But it's not clear which one is.
No, no. Whoops. Oi, 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 oi. Oi, 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 oi.
Might fall tomorrow.
Might fall tomorrow. They hope it didn't break the back on this. The way they bind them these days. Okay. All right. So let me get right on the adjustment.
Yeah, get closer.
Yeah.
At any rate.
Yeah. So that's anyway Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Obviously, we didn't discuss yet Rabbi Yehoshua.
But, it doesn't say what he based it on.
He based it either on one or the other.
That's the assumption, right?
But it wasn't clear. Now, obviously, if you go back to the Mishnah, what does the Mishnah
say?
The Mishnah says what? Says Miyom Tov Harishon. He says on the first day. That's clear that he believes that it should be done on the first day.
Right.
But what we don't know actually.
Morning or night.
Right, exactly. But what we don't know is, of course, you know, whether it is, you know, from the evening, in other words, from the Marav, or whether he means from the day, but apparently there's more to believe that it should be said in the day, in his opinion. In any case, I mean, we don't follow his opinion anyway. But still, we have to pay attention and find out why did he reason the way he did. Yes.
I'm having a lot of difficulty. I think I understand the differentiation in the Mincha, the Nisuch, understand the jump into the second night. What is the logic to that?
If you're going to say Nisach HaMayim, he's not of the opinion that Nisach HaMayim was carried out the first night of Sukkot. It wasn't.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Okay? Why? Because as we just learned in the Gemara, what Tosfos quotes the Gemara in Yuma, where it says, that it was carried on in connection with the Tovit Shel Shachar. So in other words, there it was obligatory, but whether he also feels, that it might also be done at night, so that's why we have that anonymous statement, that says, Minchosim Niskehem, it's Afila Balayla, okay? But in that case, this is why Tosfos said, maybe, in his opinion, you start in to do it on the second night, that is, the Nisach HaMayim is only on the second night. Right, rather than the first. I mean, to this very day, when do they have the Simchas Pesach Shoeva? They don't have it on the first night.
So
right, exactly. That was already, beginning with the first day of Chol HaMoed.
Right.
Of course, the first day of Chol HaMoed in Eretz Yisrael, that would be the second day of the festival.
Ah, good point.
Right, yeah.
That's what. That would be the second night.
Right. So that would be the second night, and there we know already that there was the Simchas Pesach Shoeva, and of course they're celebrating the water and so on.
The water like this.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Okay. Because
we all have any
you come to Eretz Yisrael and you see the experience I had on the second day Pesach, for example, that they are all dressed up in the holiday finery and they're waiting for buses and cabs and driving cars and everything else.
The
kids out. Huh?
They don't observe the second day.
It's Chol HaMoed.
They
certainly observe it. But
they don't
observe
work,
it as it's a holiday.
Yeah.
But they don't observe it as Yontif in the sense that we do. But they certainly observe.
That is a dichotomy kind of.
Right. Right. I mean, here we were bound not to do these things, but.
When you go to the Galut, you mix the Galut with the Eretz Yisrael, it becomes a big machlokes.
Right. Well, listen, you go to Eretz Yisrael, you have to adjust, that's all.
Yeah.
There are even
but you're not allowed you have to observe the second day.
Not unless you have the intention
of being there.
Of going there permanently. In other words, if you make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael with the intention of being there permanently, then in that case you can begin observing one day. This is the general
thing. If the shuls aren't open, they're all not open, but they're not doing the tefillah.
The shuls are davening Chol HaMoed davening. They're not davening a Yom Kippur davening.
You're
absolutely right. Well,
so
even there you have minyanim. Like, for example, I had a minyan because, we were in the Yeshiva Chofetz Chaim, and there were enough Americans over there that they made a minyan.
That's true. David points out a good point.
And some of the hotels have minyanim like that too. But the average shul is only one day Yom Kippur. With the exception, of course, of Rosh Hashanah, which is observed everywhere in Israel.
What about the last 2 days of Pesach?
The same story.
Only one day.
The seventh day of Pesach is the last day of Pesach. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, where we have to observe with at Yom Tov, they're already ready to eat chametz and everything else.
Chametz dressers.
They must think of you as strange continuing to eat matzah on the last day.
Oh, well, listen, they're aware. I mean, after all, they know what the dinim are, We're talking about people who know what the dinim are, not talking about people who don't know anything about it. I don't know whether Paris would know. Or Shalom et Aloni.
Okay.
Shalom again, Vaiter, as we would say. Let's continue. All right. Toshma. So they're trying to resolve this problem. So they say, come, listen. The Omer Rabbi Abohu said, Loilim Wodo Rabbi Eliezer Elemelulim. It says Rabbi Eliezer really learned his tradition to begin on the first day only from Lulav. Ikodi Amr, and there are those who say, Rabbi Abohu Gemara Gomila, that this statement that Rabbi Abohu just made about Rabbi Eliezer, that he votes for Lulav, not for Nisach HaMayim, okay? So they say that he actually had heard
He had actually a tradition to this effect. I mean, somewhere or other he'd come across the learning that he heard that this was Rabbi Eliezer's final opinion. The Ikud Amrei, and there were those who say that Masnisa Shemiyale, that he had learned a statement. Now, Masnisa usually means Mishnah, but it could also mean a Baraisa. Because remember that the Baraisa, these were Mishnayas that were never accepted in the Mishnah. Baraisa means, you know, as we said, it means outside. In other words, Baraisa. Yeah. So, this is the meaning over here. That he learned a certain Baraisa, and they say, "My, what is this Baraisa that he learned?" The Tanya. This is what the Baraisa said. Me'amosai maskir and alak shomim. When do we begin reciting much of a ruach, a merit hagoshim, you know, for the rain? So, Rabbi Eliezer omer mishas mitilas lulot. Rabbi Eliezer says, from the time that you begin to take the lulav. So there we see clearly what is this saying? That he's an opinion, in other words, he bases it upon the lulav. So that Nisach HaMayim doesn't enter right now. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says that you begin saying it, Mishas HaNachoso, from the time that you put down the lulav. Now, this already is going to be a big problem again. Why? Why is it going to be a problem? Simple. What day did Rabbi Yeshua say in the Mishnah? He started to say.
The last day.
Which was?
Shmini Atzeres.
Shmini Atzeres, right. When do we actually put down the lulav?
Oshana Rabbah.
Okay, so now again the question is going to be raised as to what does Rabbi Yeshua mean? Does he mean actually on Shmini Atzeres? In other words, the day when we're no longer holding, you know, a lulav and esrei? Or does it mean simply on the final day? If it's on the final day, then that contradicts the statement that, you know, you begin saying it on Shmini Atzeres, because the implication there would be that it would be Hoshana Rabbah that he's talking about. So we have to clarify that. I lost you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This particular Baraisa quotes Rabbi Yeshua as saying that you begin to say Masha Baruch, right? Maskir and Geshomim, when? The day when you put down the lulav. Okay. Now we know from our own experience that the day that we put down the lulav is actually
Hoshana Rabbah,
the seventh day of Yom Kippur, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas he said Shmini Atzeres.
So we don't use the lulav.
So the term again needs clarification. What does it mean?
Rabbi Yehoshua said Yom Acharon
Yom Tov Acharon Sholchat.
So
right,
saying
exactly.
He's contradicting
himself. Didn't say Yom Acharon, he said Yom Tov Acharon, which is a little bit different.
Yom Tov Acharon.
Yeah, take a look.
After the after the holiday.
No, the final day, Yom Tov Acharon.
Right, because there's a difference. But Yom Acharon maybe might refer to the seventh day.
True.
Because technically, Shmini Atzeres is independent. Even though it's attached to Sukkot, you understand?
Yeah.
I mean, we had that. We learned that in the Tosfos too last week. Right. But technically.